Hello, everybody, and welcome, welcome, welcome to the second Down and Dirty Show with me, Idaho Beau, and Vivacious Vic.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Sunshine?
Oh,
actually,
so
we were on Sunshine's show yesterday. This show is pre-recorded, but hopefully we are going to get together. I'm going to travel south to go visit Vicky, and hopefully next time we're on, which will be May 3rd, I believe, we will go live. So we will be able to take your questions and calls and all of the above. I'd like to start with a quote from a series of books that I've been reading called The Ringing Cedars of Russia. It's by a gentleman named Vladimir Migre. And this is from the fifth book. It's actually on page 113 if you want to look it up, the Book of Kin. May what has been conceived by the soul's dream now sprout from the earth. And with that, we will start our second show. Vic, take it away.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. I would like to give a couple disclaimers from our first show, as we were talking about the importance of building soil and taking care of the soil and identifying whatever the soil needs in order to be very healthy. One, we were talking about wood chip mulch, how you could get a chip drop from tree companies and get like 10 yards of wood chips. It's not sawdust, it's big chips of wood. And we were talking about using those as mulch. It's very, very important that those only become mulch. They do not get dug into the soil because it takes so much of the nutrients in the soil to break down those wood chips that you literally will not be able to grow anything in your garden with all that wood chips dug in. We're talking about mulching. Yes.
May I ask a question, because it's been asked of me? Since you're talking about mulch, can you describe exactly what that is? Because some people are unaware of what that is.
Putting a layer of an organic material on top of the soil to deter weeds, to maintain the integrity of the soil, to create a biosphere underneath that mulch, full of nutrients. It retains water and moisture, and it's a weed deterrent, really. It keeps the weed, but you've got to get it deep enough to do that. You know, we're talking maybe 4 inches, 3 to 4 inches deep. And we were talking about lasagna gardening with the laying down the newsprint or the cardboard, and then the mulch goes on top of that. As that cardboard or newsprint deteriorates, of course, then that mulch is still sitting on top of the soil. It's just important not to dig it in. Other things like straw and leaves and different, you know, lots of sticks and stuff can become mulch. Those things can be dug in, just not wood chips.
Right. And with the lasagna gardening, don't you want to put the newsprint or cardboard down again without any color ink, because they are toxic? But on top of that, don't you want to put your compost plant into the compost and then mulch on top of that, correct?
That is correct if it's a new garden, if the plants are not already rooted in and perennials.
Right.
If this is a brand new garden, yes.
Yes, or even a yearly vegetable garden that are not perennials. And can you Can you tell everybody the difference between a perennial and an annual, just in case they're unaware of that?
Annuals die in the when it freezes, they're done. They don't come back.
It's
Perennials come
annual a
back
year, right? Like for
every
1
year is
year.
an
Yes.
annual, is 1 year.
Yeah.
Perennials come back every year, like artichokes, raspberries, all your berry plants, strawberries. Those would be a perennial because they come back every year out of dormancy and they go through their whole life cycle. They will go dormant again if you live where it's freezing. And so perennials come back every year.
Thank you. And did you have another point, another
I
disclaimer?
have another point that I don't claim to be an expert in anything. The information that I freely want to give is based on my experience. I am about 90% experience and about 10% book smart in online looking for answers. So I just want to use that as a clarification. There's unlimited ways of growing a garden. And then you put your experience, you put your creativity, you use the climate you live in and all of the factors that come into play on what you're going to plant, where you're going to plant, who's planting, how interested are you, or are you going? It's really an experiential thing, as so many aspects of life are experiential. So you put your energy, your intention is really important. Your intent is really powerful. So I just want that disclaimer that I'm only going off my experience, but there's unlimited possibilities when you're growing a garden. And that's all I need to say, I think, about that.
I think that's a good springboard to get into what we want to talk about today is planning a garden. And we're going to hit some of the points again from our experience. I do have some book learning. However, it was a long time ago, and I have to say my experiential endeavors have taught me much more than a book can. And yesterday when we were talking with Sunshine Vic, I brought up the folks that started Finhorn Echo Village years and years and years ago. And it was just three people, and they lived in a mobile home, basically. They call them caravans in the UK. And they grew a garden. And one of the members of this, it was a husband and wife and their friend. And the friend, Dorothy, would go out into the garden every morning and literally communicate with her plants. She said she was tipped off by what she called divas, D-I-V-A-S, or like the elementals of the plants on what they needed. And again, that was experience. She wasn't a huge gardener, and they were growing. They became popular and famous because they were growing 40-pound cabbages, and they had such an abundance of food that people started coming out to see what they were doing. And today, Finhorn is actually one of the largest eco villages in the world. But I say that because it is experience that is the most important. And some of you may not have a lot of garden experience. And since it is spring, we're going to talk about planting a garden. Now, ideally, you want to start getting your seed catalogs and maybe messing around with a piece of paper where you want to put what in the winter when things are, you're kind of socked in anyway in the north you are. But we're going to go from here because it is a good springboard, kind of a pun intended there. So I'd like to start with a few points, and then Vic, you can take it away after me.
Okay.
To me, I think the first, your most important issue in planning a garden is location, location, location. Where are you going to put it? Ideally, most vegetables and fruits, need at least 6 hours of sun. And you always have to have access to water. You don't want to be putting your garden out in the middle of a field when you where you don't have any kind of irrigation or a hose that reaches or whatever. So you always want to make sure you have access to water. I'll give you a little a short story of my own experience. I lived in a town called Cuna, which is south of Boise. I had about an acre of land, and I put a garden in the very back northeast corner of it, so it was south facing, so it got full sun, but I had to have an awfully long hose to water everything. We had forced irrigation. I think I mentioned this last time, Vicki. Cuna has irrigation water, and actually the whole Treasure Valley has irrigation water. And we had a box where the water came into the backyard at the very at the fence line, really close to my garden. So we actually dug a trench and we ran PVC pipe all the way from the inbox to the garden, and then we put a faucet on it. So I had water right there. So that is a really important issue. Make sure you have access to water. The soil, again, we spoke about that last week, is very important. And you always want to add organic material to feed your soil. And you can do that yearly. You can top off your vegetable and even some of your berry bushes. You can put some organic material around there. Vicky's talked about mulching, which is super important. Then I wanted to mention, if you do not have the space for a garden, I don't. I know Vicky's got a huge garden. I don't. I live in an apartment building. There's a few things you can do. You can look around your neighborhood and see if there's any neighbors, especially if you're good friends with them, that have any area that you can garden, and maybe split the harvest with them as a payoff for letting you use their land. You can always look in your town if there's a community garden where you can actually lease a plot yearly. That's an option. Or what I do now is I have a nice little sunny balcony. It's actually a patio. I put everything in pots. Everything that I grow here is in pots. So that people saying that, well, I don't have any land, you could put a tomato in a pot on your balcony if you live in an apartment building like a high rise. You do have space. You could put some herbs. And then the last thing I wanted to say before I let you take it away, Vic, is you need to de determine your growing zone. It's your plant hardiness zone. And I'm going to write a little article and put it on our BBS page. That's bbsradio.com/downanddirty, with some of the tips from what we're talking about today. And I have a couple of books that I'd like to recommend. But as far as determining your plant hardiness zone, so what does that mean? Do you have frost? Do you have scorching sun? There's a map on it's www plantHardiness.ars.usda.gov. And like I said, I will put that up on our page, but you can look on that, or even you can just Google or search for what growing zone do I live in. And it will tell you what to plant, what you can plant, when to plant it, and et cetera. So Vic, take it away.
Just to finish up on that one point about what zone you're in, if you are buying starts and they all have tags, commercial tags, almost every plant will put the zone hardiness because nurseries sell a lot of things that will die in certain zones, but they're selling beautiful plants to make money, but And we have been in zone five forever. And then about 4 or 5 years ago, it changed to five and six due to climate change,
Air
which is a
quotes.
real thing. The reasons that a lot of, anyway, we won't get into that. Anyway, we live
Yeah.
in two, in this particular era, we live in two zones now, which, so we're right on the edge of moving into a hotter, the bigger the number, the warmer the zone is. The smaller the number, way up north, 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 is the coldest temperatures. So one thing I'd like to say about planning your garden, if you do it on paper before you get going, I would identify what you want to eat. Because if you're limited on space, it's really important. We get really gung-ho in spring because, oh my gosh, I just want to plant everything. I just want to eat everything. I want all my herbs, all my veggies, all my fruit, everything fresh. Well, that's a wonderful desire, but sometimes it can be very unrealistic when we get into gardening because if you're limited on space or you just want to see plants grow, but you don't really have that big of interest, like, parsnips, I mean, turnips, rutabagas, I mean, there's certain things that I don't have any interest in growing. Other people would have an interest in eating those if you're able to share things that maybe you don't like. But for me, I really, really get very serious about growing what it is that I want to eat. And then I share everything with my family, friends. And then like I said in our first show, I do CSAs where people pay me for bags of produce every year or every month. Or actually, it's every week. Some are biweekly. So that's really important in planning is getting the varieties that thrive in your area and also getting really clear about what you love to eat and what you want to harvest. And then with the, I have a lot of stuff in pots. I have a lot of property to put stuff in the ground, but I'm really scaling back on the amount of basil that I grow. And that's going in a pot. And I've got fennel growing in a pot. I planted some holy basil, which I've never grown before. I'm doing that in a pot so that I can really, really pay attention to it. And so a lot of my herbs are going to be in pots because some of them tend to really spread. And I
Oregano.
don't, oregano and all your mints will take over your garden. So you just need to, kind of be careful with that kind of thing. And that's a learning curve. If you don't know about it, you can look a lot of these things up, or you can direct message us and we can give you answers. And we should give our email address to people, our
So they
BBS.
go to bbsradio.com again and /down and dirty. And there is an email. You can direct message us through the radio station and we will get it for sure. And we will be more than happy to answer any questions that you have. And can I put in here when you're talking about planning your garden on paper, you want to just determine your square footage. And it's a simple formula. You take the width times the length of your space that you want to turn into a garden, and that equals your square footage. There's a really good book for people. People say, well, it's really good for beginners. It's actually good for anybody. Square Foot Gardening, and I'll put this up on our site. There's a book by a gentleman named Chauncey Cruz Jr., Square Foot Gardening and Companion Planting, and he tells you how to do it. There's a website called squarefootgardening.org. They also have a book. And I know Vic's on the same page as I am on this. If you are a beginning gardener, start small. because you will be very successful if you don't overdo it. Again, Vicky said, you kind of go crazy when the seed catalogs come in, or you go to the garden center and you see all these beautiful seed packets and beautiful starts, and you just want to put everything in. But if you start small and you're successful, your first garden, then, pun intended, grow your garden every year bigger and bigger till you get exactly what you want. But that's just a little tip. Got anything else to say on that, Vic?
Well, going back to the watering, I'm fortunate that we have irrigation and we've got a ditch that runs right behind our house. And then we've got my daughter and I live next door. We share the cistern and we have our pump there. So all of our stuff's on drip. We don't broadcast spray any water. It's all on drip, so it goes right to the roots. And there's no, and when it's 100 degrees out, July, August, and parts of September, you're broadcast spraying, a good part of that is evaporating. So we've done it this way. But yeah, it's really important to the mulching is the number one thing to help you conserve water. In really dry, arid climates like where I live. Bo, she lives not in an arid climate. It's more,
Mountainous.
mountain, and you have a lot more rain that comes across you than
Yes,
we do.
yes.
So water conservation is super important in gardening. It is to me because if you're on city water, you're paying for every gallon of water that you put out there. So water conservation becomes a really big deal in my mind, anyway.
Are you familiar? I know you are, Vic, with OLAS, OLLAS.
I don't know.
I know they use them in Mexico and Central America and probably South America too. They're a clay pot that you actually put into the soil and you fill them up with water, and it disperses the water right to the root zones. Again,
Nice.
mulching, no matter where you are, it's important to mulch. It doesn't, I mean, even if you live in a rainforest, I would still mulch to conserve
Well,
water and to break down.
once again, a lot of your hints about this can be found when you're walking in nature, desert, forest, you name it. The soil is never left bare in nature. It's always got a covering from leaves dropping, trees falling over and decomposing, grasses that have fallen over from winter time or have run their life cycle and now they're growing new stuff and everything's laying on top of the ground. That's mulching. It's the natural form of mulching. So this is just trying to mimic nature, and protecting and growing soil is what mulching does.
So going back to deciding what to grow, definitely grow what you want to eat, you and your family. And then you were talking about starts having the zone that they're most compatible to when you go to your nursery, and the little tags say optimal for zone 7 or whatever. Also on the back of the seed packets, they usually have all the information. If it's an heirloom or a hybrid, which we can get into probably another time because there is a difference. I'll just say shortly, an heirloom is a plant that has not been hybridized. And a hybridize, when you hybridize, you take, let's say you have a small, really sweet tomato and you like the flavor, but you want it bigger. And then you see another tomato, you have another tomato that's large, but the flavor sort of, you cross-pollinate those, and that is hybridization. It is not a GMO. It is a hybrid, is not a GMO. I just want to make that very obvious and important stand out. They are not the same thing. Anyway, on the back of the seed packet, it will tell you when to sow the seed. when how big it should be when you plant it out in your garden. Now, it's kind of late, unless you live in Alaska maybe, or in the Yukon somewhere, to start your seeds. So this was more information for next year. But there are some crops, and I know for sure in Boise, and I've even done it up here further north, that you can direct sow into the soil when the soil warms up a bit. Cucumbers, squash, your greens you can do right now, kale, which will be great harvested in the fall, but you can start a lot of things. What are some other things? Carrots, radishes, you can direct seed into the soil. And some things actually, like carrots and radishes and beets, which are a root vegetable, prefer not to be started in a seed tray. They prefer to be direct sown right into the garden. But all that information is generally on the back of the seed packet. Have anything to say?
Yeah, squashes, they grow so fast, and depending on what level of gardening you're at, yeah, people prefer to go and buy plants that are already have flowers on them and plant them in their garden in April and May. Well, the plant actually goes into a little bit of shock when you put it into the ground. So it takes a week, 2 weeks, sometimes 3 weeks to recover from tape being taken out of a pot into the ground. And all squashes, cucumbers, all kinds of squashes, pumpkins, zucchinis, summer squash, they all would prefer to be direct sown into the ground when it's nice and hot because they'll sprout almost immediately, maybe 4 days. And you're off and running, and you don't have to disturb the roots. No root crops like to be grown in a pot and put back in because they send down a pretty nice tap root, and you're well ahead of the game if you direct seed. I've got
Right.
beets, I've got carrots, I've got all my root. I've just planted potatoes 3 days ago. They're not quite up yet, but my turnips, they're already up and thriving. And it's April, what is it, the 14th today? 13th. April 13th. And they're already up well ahead of the game. So I'm really happy about that.
You just said something that made me smile about people wanting to, they go to the nursery center and they see a plant with flowers on it and they want to plant it. And we're talking vegetables. I'm not talking ornamentals right now. And they want to plant it. I used to manage a nursery for a company called Zamzos in Boise, and I had to do it. I had to bring tomato plants in well before they were ready to go on the ground. There's a saying in Boise, when the snow's off Bogus Basin, which is the ski mountain you can see from all of the whole city, when the snow's gone from Bogus Basin, plant your tomatoes. Well, people would come in and there'd still be, people were still skiing and they'd want to plant their tomatoes. And even though I had to order them and bring them in because of the company I worked for, I tried to discourage people, but they just wouldn't listen. I said, I bet I see you in a few weeks. And I saw so many of my return customers that way. I guess, the company made more money. I didn't feel good about that, but I did try to warn them. I
Yeah.
also wanted to say, in regards back to your hardiness zone, like, what zone are you in? When should you plant what and what have you? Your local extension office often has a list of best times to plant what and where according to where you live. So go local. Going local is always the best thing. Don't, I have to say, when I was an early gardener, I would look at these gardening magazines and go, oh, I want to plant that. I want to plant that. But it was not appropriate for where I live. So always pay attention your extension office. I did put an article up on our page on bbsradio.com about the extension office offering the master gardener classes. Well, they have a lot of free handouts too. And if you do not have an office near you, like I know there's a really nice one in Boise, the closest one for me here is probably about an hour north of me in Bonner's Ferry. But you can find a lot of the information online, and they usually have an online newsletter as well. So that's really important. Make sure what you want to grow is appropriate for where you live. Okay, so I'll take it back. I know Vicky yesterday mentioned with sunshine that she saves a lot of her seeds. So plants that she grows, some of her lettuces, she could tell you all that she did. And I did the same thing when I had land, or even when I was in the community garden. I would let some of my plants go to seed so I could save that seed back. If you don't have seed saved from before, I'd like to, there's a really good heirloom seed company called Baker Creek Seed Company. I think they're out of Missouri, and they have the most beautiful vegetables and fruits from around the world. Again, and they have a really great catalog too that you could, I think they have a free one, but you could also buy it. And they're always beautiful pictures, and they're very helpful. They have a store also in Petaluma, California, I believe. And then a local seed company, I'm not local there anymore, but Vic is, our friend of ours named Casey started a seed company called Snake River Seed Company. Again, it's local. So if Vicky wanted something she hadn't already grown, it would be appropriate for her to go to a local seed company. Again, they have like 35 people that are growing seeds for them, but she started small with her own garden. You used to see Casey. Didn't have a car. She did everything, all of her gardening, her tools. She had like on her bike with a trailer behind her. She's an awesome woman. So hat off to you, Casey. Yeah. What else do you have to say?
Well, I really, really wanted to grow radicchio this year, because I love it, love it, love it in the salads. I grow lots of greens, and I couldn't. I went to four different our main four nursery slash gardening centers. None of them had radicchio, so I did order some from a company called territorialseed.com, which is out of Cottage Grove, Oregon, I believe.
Oregon. Yep.
And I got my radicchio. It's going to be here tomorrow. And then I love growing bok choy, but I like to grow the littler versions of bok choy. So this one is called jok choy. And they're just really small. They don't get in the big, nice, clumps. But for green salads, all my lettuce is up, my kale's up, my cilantro's coming up. I've got three different kinds of endive going, and it's up. So I just can't wait. That's what I love the most. Is my green garden, because I love to eat the greens. They are the most nutrient-rich vegetables you can get. So I really highly recommend being able to grow your greens. And they thrive in pots on balconies or on a patio. They grow so effortlessly with water and sunshine and good soil. So I highly recommend you getting your green garden in right now, because this is the perfect time for this area to get that going.
So, one of the things I wanted to talk about that you just reminded me about are the perennials again. Like I said, I have everything in pots, and my strawberries are looking great. I bet you have a strawberry patch, don't you, Vicky?
Very small, but yes,
Yeah.
they're thriving.
It won't be small for long, believe me. When I was in CUNA, it kind of took over a whole bed, which is great, great. But you can buy your starts. It's very difficult. I find it difficult to start strawberries from seed. I've tried before, and you see these things online and they look super easy. So there are two different kinds of strawberries. There's June bearing and ever bearing. The June bearing come all on at once. And if you want to make jam or can or something like that, that's a really good kind. The ever bearing will start in late spring, early summer to put the fruit on, and they'll go all the way until the frost. So you'll be eating strawberries. You won't, unless you have a large patch, you won't get a lot, but they will go all the time.
One thing I wanted to say about the strawberries is they send out the runners. That's how they become bigger, bigger, bigger patches. So you cut that runner off and put it in the ground, and you've got another strawberry plant. So the more runners that come off the plant, the smaller your strawberries are going to get from your mother plant because it's feeding all these runners. So that's another important thing with strawberries is to cut the runners off to keep the mother plant really thriving, and then start the other ones. If you need to grow your patch, you've got the runners, which is free multiplication there. I've never even seen a strawberry seed, so I mean, I've eaten them, but I've never seen one to plant. That's funny.
Well, the seeds are on the outside of the
They're on the
berry,
outside,
and so
right?
I've seen videos where they like take a thin slice and then they propagate it indoors. So I haven't ever seen a seed either, but I tried that and it just kind of went moldy. So
That's
yeah,
pretty technical.
no. Yeah. Yes. What else did I see? Oh, the other day I homeschool my granddaughter, so I'm always trying to find videos for her. And we're getting into my daughter just purchased a curriculum for her about gardening and biodiversity, and it comes with a number of plants. Anyway, long story short, I was looking for some growing videos, and somebody took it. It looked like a beefsteak sized tomato, and they took a slice of the tomato. And they got, it looked like a little aquarium or something where they put the tomato right up against the glass and then surrounded it by soil. And all of the seeds in the like the tomato, they all sprouted and they all grew plants. I've never tried that, but that looks pretty interesting.
I'm sitting in my house sit here, and that lady in her window has that exact same thing. It's a like a 1 by 9 box with a clear lid on top, with all these little compartments. And she's starting African violets in hers. So she's got all these little African violets, and it's just full of moisture. I don't know how successful something like that is, but I've never done that either. But for seeds, what a godsend, because you could start a lot of seeds in that small of a container.
How about we touch on succession planning?
Good idea. That's really important. Unless you're a canner and you just plant all your beets, all your carrots, all everything all at once. I've just planted about a 3 by 3 section of one long row. I just planted my beets, and then I'll probably wait 2 to 3 weeks before I do my next 3 by 3 section, so that not everything is coming ripe all at once. And with trying to provide other families for produce, I want those things to be available for a good part of the season. But also, if you're single and you got a 3 by 3 section of beets, that's enough beets when they come on ready to harvest to can your beets or dehydrate things. But I'm just going for the longevity of the season to have beets every week for salads or.
I have a great, if you like pickled beets, canning pickled beets, I have a great recipe for that. I also wanted to touch on the importance of attracting pollinators to your garden. I know Vicky has got her whole yard is absolutely gorgeous, and she's got intermingled amongst her vegetable plants, she's got all kinds of flowers that attract pollinators, and a lot of the flowers that attract pollinators are also good companion planting.
Absolutely.
Associates, I guess, is the best word to use. And they're in permaculture, they don't just plant rows, they plant zones. So they'll plant things that, again, as I would think it would be more of a companion planting on steroids in permaculture, where you would plant things together that are symbiotic and help each other
Absolutely.
in all the ways that are needed. But the pollinators really need a little boost right now. I've noticed in my area, the bee population and the butterfly population. Last year, I hardly saw any butterflies, and I know why. They're knocking down all the trees around me. Don't get me started. I do have a little bee friend that comes and visits me, and I swear it's the same bee every year. Her name's Phoebe. It's her third year here. She's already come to say hi, and it's pretty cool. But first pollinator I've seen was a few days ago on my balcony, on my patio. I don't have a balcony. But planting flowers that you like in amongst your vegetables, feel free. Make your garden beautiful. Make your garden your masterpiece. It can be as beautiful as you want. If you prefer a lot of flowers, and there are a lot of edible flowers too, nasturtiums can actually eat marigolds, they're a little bit bitter, but there are quite a few flowers that are edible. Make it you. You do you. Again, something we haven't touched on now that I'm thinking about it is where to plant what in your garden. You always want to plant your taller crops, be it corn or tomatoes, or if you trellis your cucumbers, you always want them in the back of the garden. So you want the shortest growing, like the strawberries, and you want it to kind of look like staircase going up, and you want the smallest in south facing part of your garden and the tallest in the north facing. And come solstice time, the sun will be pretty much straight over above us, so your whole garden's going to get the sun. But as the sun moves across the sky in the spring, the things in the front are going to get that needed sunshine.
Protection,
So there's that. There's at so much. And again, I'd like to write an article. Maybe Vicky will write an article too, and we could just put some of these hints into something that you can go back and refer to. And again, there's so many garden books. One book that when I was really into ornamental gardening for a lot of years. And then when we moved to Cuna, my now ex-husband begged me to put in a vegetable garden. I wanted to put in like an herb knot garden with a place to sit for coffee and the whole nine. But I went with him, and I had some friends that had two and a half acres of land that they garden, and they had a farm stand on their property. And I started volunteering on Saturdays. I'd go and I'd help them because they were super busy at the cash register. And then little by little, we became really great friends. And they taught me a lot of what I know now. about vegetable gardening, and they turned me on to a book called The Vegetable Gardener's Bible by Edward C. Smith. There's actually a picture of it on my page on BBS. It has got everything in there. It is amazing. It has all the how to start a garden to how to maintain a garden, and then it's got individual plants, when to plant in different areas, what they need as far as moisture, because all plants aren't the same. Not every plant needs as much water as its neighbor. So that's another thing to consider is what you plant next to what. And again, if you have questions, please feel free to ask. Pardon me.
I wanted to chime in on placement of things, and I know that we will do a whole show on permaculture, but one of the rules in or big, very prominent suggestions in permaculture is to the placement of the things that you're going to use daily. Herbs, you're going to tend to use daily. So those can be in the pots or they can be in the front. You can just have a section with your basil and your thyme and your oregano and the things that you really want to use daily very close to your door so that you just go out, snip, snip your chives or things. And then you move in a progression. Your fruit trees need to be way back because they take a full season from bloom to harvest. So you don't want those close to your house or your back door. You want those far away because you're not going to visit those except maybe 3 or 4 times a year. So you want to, and it, part of the succession planting is the appropriate place. And this all comes from experience, but there's plenty of information on this. And we will do a permaculture thing because permaculture is, oh my gosh, it's the most amazing. It to me, it's one of the most amazing things that I've experienced. And I did go to a 2-week training, 7,000 feet in Colorado, and unbelievable. But everything was oriented towards optimal health, optimal water, optimal sunshine, and close proximity to level, depending on your usage, which I think is really, it makes it so much easier when you have it planned that way.
Don't you feel like using the permaculture way of gardening is more mimicking nature than
Very much.
nothing wrong with having straight rows? Believe me, there's, like Vicky said in the very beginning, there's a plethora of ways to grow a garden. But when you use permaculture methods, you are more mimicking nature. And, for me, I'm chomping at the bit to get some land because I really, yeah. Until then, my little space is beautiful and I love it and I'm very thankful for it.
Well, not only are we nurturing our pots and our little small gardens, they're actually nurturing us too, energetically. The exchange. It's about this exchange between what we're involved with in nature and what we give to it and what we receive from it is this symbiotic relationship that's second to none, as far as I'm concerned, because it shuts out so much of the distractions of our modern day world to just get in the zone of the one-on-one with your plants and the air and the sun and the water and the bugs and the birds. And I mean, it's a whole ecosystem. It can be on your patio, it can be on your balcony, it can be on a little strip behind your house or along your fence, or it can be an acre or 2 or 10. So it's just it's a wonderful way to get down and dirty, but get grounded. Get grounded
Get
because we
grounded.
really, really, the earth will accept everything we have to offer. Walk barefoot and just unclutter your mind and be in the garden for 5 minutes or 5 hours, it doesn't matter. It's all really beneficial.
It is. And actually, if you think about going back to Prime Earth or the Garden of Eden, whatever you want to call it, that's how we were meant to be.
Yes.
Another thing I want to touch on really fast, going back to the Anastasia Ringing Cedars book, is she has a method where you actually put the seeds you plant in your mouth so they know you. They know you. You love them, they love you back, and everything Vicky said. So, how do you want to wrap it up, Vic? We're almost out of
Well,
time.
based on putting the seeds in your mouth, why would you do that? Because the saliva and the seeds interact, and the seeds now have your DNA on them.
Yeah.
So when you plant them, they are actually growing personal medicine tailored to your DNA. It
Exactly,
is the most
exactly.
amazing idea. So we can leave it at that. Maybe we do our show next week or next time. Anyway, those shows are coming. Just a dedication to permaculture, a dedication to the ringing cedars,
Electroculture.
and electroculture, which we haven't even talked about, which is another miracle lost. And actually lost on purpose. It was kind of hidden and taken away from us.
Oh, gee,
But
imagine
oh
that.
my gosh, it is so powerful and so simple. So I look forward to that one.
All right, guys. Well, I guess on that note, we will say adieu for this time. And hopefully, next time you hear us, which will be in 2 weeks, we'll be live from Boise, Idaho. And we
Yes.
may have a special guest. We haven't figured that one out yet, but stay tuned. Oh, also, if you would like to support this channel and assist us in bringing you lots of information we haven't even touched on, canning recipes or making tinctures or beauty products, you can support us by going to bbs.com, bbsradio.com, excuse me, bbsradio.com/downanddirty. Underneath the banner, there's a little help support this channel button. You can click on that. You can support us as little as $2.99 a month. We would totally appreciate it because it helps us bringing you everything that we love, and we just want to help as many people as we can. And on that note, Vicki, I'll say goodbye. I love you.
I love you too. Thank you. And thank you everyone for listening. And we will talk at you soon. In the meantime, get down and dirty in the soil. Don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid.